So Norway has a very interesting rule about whether it drills into Arctic. And they have a very intense internal dialogue. Do they drill? Do they not drill? And when they say we don't drill, they go and look at their pensions. And we're like, maybe we drill a little bit.
Should we just recognize that capitalism and environmentalism are not compatible? You talked about the fact that if we don't take care of nature, then in the end, our economies collapse. But most capitalism works on much shorter time frames, the tragedy of the horizons, if you like. So how do we get that right?
Can we
get it right under capitalism?
Yeah, so it's a good question. Now, is capitalism not consistent with sustainability? I would say there are two ways to answer that. If one thinks a very narrow definition of capitalism, which is I'm looking at the short-term profit, the next quarter revenues and all that, you will end up into a situation where you overexploit nature, the earth, and so on and so forth, and we know the outcomes of that. If you consider capitalism as a system where there are policies and regulations that have aligned better long-term profitability to the environment, then you start seeing that capitalism can't be a solution to the problem, right? Let me say this. There are studies out there that say that better financial markets and regulations around it and how environmental targets are ingrained into them can actually save the world to the tune of like $50 trillion. That's really difficult to come out of government budgets, right? It means significant taxation, significant cost on the current generation. So this is what capitalism is good at. It's good at actually sending capital and resources where more returns are sought. And therefore, there is a solution there where you need to consider how do I bring that to home, right? There are ways where we have done some progress, carbon taxes, CBAM, and the like, CTS mechanisms, which, yes, they have problems or they had problems and they need further improvement. But I can't see how one can deliver what we need without private capital.
Would you agree with that, Carla?
There is a role for private investment, definitely, and the Green Party's approach is about public and private investment together. But I just don't see, given the scale of the problem facing us as humanity, it's impossible, as far as I'm concerned, to see how the solutions can come about through a predominantly market-led approach. Now, the question was, are capitalism and environmentalism fundamentally incompatible? I don't really want to spend any time focusing too much on labels like capitalism and anti-capitalism and so on, because they all carry a lot of baggage and then we'll just end up in a definitions debate. You know, it's accurate, isn't it, to describe the UK economy as a mixed economy, which has got some capitalism and some things like the NHS. Although with increasing privatisation over the last few decades.
Let's not go down that rabbit hole.
No, exactly. So I was just sort of acknowledging that cul-de-sac.
Absolutely. And then avoid
reverse
it.
Back out of it and say that, in my view, markets and competition have their place for some parts of the economy. But broadly, the Green Party believes there's a greater role for public ownership and investment and regulation. And those of you that were following the elections with interest will have seen that the Green Party's manifesto was around increased role for those things, public ownership, public investment, and not being shy about talking about taxation, not increasing taxes for most people, but introducing a wealth tax and changing some of the existing taxes like capital gains tax and national insurance, which currently those two taxes in particular have big deliberate loopholes, which are designed to mean the wealthiest pay less than the rest of us. And that does have the potential to raise tens of billions of pounds every year by the end of the next parliament, which could be transformative for the level of investment we need. It's also really important to look at, and this is, you know, not just me or the Greens saying this, this is the Office for Budget Responsibility, loads of economic organisations that cost so much less to prevent or limit realistically, we're not going to prevent it now, climate change, than it does to deal with the consequences. I think a ratio of 1 to 4 is what I've often heard.
Right.
But so it's a sound in investment.
Understood. But this is really about kind of what drives action and whether you can align market incentives and business incentives with climate action.
Yeah, I think you can.
Well, we're not. Are we doing it? I mean, No. Look. I mean, look at carbon trading. Case in point.
Yeah.
You talked about tax. Actually, we don't tax carbon.
I agree. That's why the Green Party supports carbon tax.
Right.
But
exactly.
Not the trading.
So, yeah. so the construction of this enormous market in emissions, which hasn't saved any emissions, but it's created a lot of jobs and a lot of incentives. The market isn't working here.
Absolutely. And I had a meeting with someone who lives in my constituency just a couple of days ago who has, he's a chemistry teacher at school, and he has got more and more involved in campaigning, including taking some companies to court because of their greenwash. And this is slightly off ESG, but still firmly on greenwash and market mechanisms in terms of describing their products as green. So, when you are choosing an energy provider, you might want to choose one that claims it has a 100% renewables tariff. Now, you'll know that probably that the way the grid works, you can't literally choose which electrons come from a wind turbine to your house. It all goes into one grid, but you can basically pay that energy company to generate the same amount of renewable energy. And some energy companies, I probably shouldn't plug which one's which here, but some energy companies, they do actually spend that money building new wind farms. Other energy companies have renewables tariffs, but they claim that they're renewable by purchasing credits that are connected to renewable energy generation. But the way the financial trading works, those credits get removed from the actual generation and they're traded separately. And there's been multiple examples found of where it is physically impossible that that has come from renewables. So you can trade them internationally. You can buy renewables credits from Norway or Iceland and use them in Ireland or the UK. There isn't an interconnector between Iceland and the UK. So the electrons that's running your fridge are not coming from renewables and cannot be.
Right. So is that greenwashing?
I think so, yes. Yeah. And the courts seem to agree from the court cases that have already happened. So there is a role for the market, but we need to make sure that it's not smoke and mirrors. And I think there are some elements that absolutely are.
So are you talking about the agricultural industry? It is the agricultural economy, which is, you know, functions like a market. It has to make profits. We understand that. Do you regard the way it functions now is completely incompatible with environmental protection and or climate protection?
It's certainly been a huge driver of ecological degradation in the UK and obviously around the world. And I mean, yes, of course, there's market price signals for food and commodities and so on, but obviously it's also heavily subsidised. You know, we subsidise farming in this country, in England alone, to the tune of £2.5 billion every year. In fact, in the last 30 years, calculated with a policy analyst looking at this, that we've given about £9 billion to farmers and landowners just for environmental stewardship schemes. And, you know, in that time, we've continued to see enormous declines in our wildlife and biodiversity and habitats. And, you know, sometimes, you know, absolutely good examples of very good stewards of nature, landowners and farmers and nature-friendly farmers who are trying to do their best. But I think the broader picture is one of continued managed decline of our species and habitats. I mean, you mentioned the Stern Review earlier into the economics of climate change. There was also, of course, the Das Gupta Review into the economics of biodiversity, which I think was a very interesting report. I can't claim to have read every single page in it. It's a very long
book. And the footnotes.
And the footnotes, no. But certainly one thing that did catch my eye when going through some of it was that actually, I think his name is Pavel Das Gupta, did actually say in it that you need to put some parts of the world, of the natural world, off limits to extractive capitalism. And actually, I think it's a very interesting point that he made, and that actually you see that in places like Antarctica, for example, which was put off limits to mining and to weapons testing, thankfully, at the end of the 1980s, start of the 1990s. It's now a kind of continent for science and peace. We see it, I think, in the battle to stop deep sea mining, in the high seas. That's something that my partner Louisa Casson works on at Greenpeace. So just a little plug for her campaign. But they're currently battling at the International Seabed Authority Absolutely. Right now to try and put that off limits. So I think, yes, sure, I can sort of see more why there is a case for private sector investment in, the energy system transformation. I can see there's a role there for innovation and price incentives and so on. But, I don't quite understand sometimes when there's this whole debate about how do we get more money into investing into restoring nature? Well, I mean, nature would do quite a good job of restoring itself if we just stop destroying it. And sometimes we're destroying it by spending money on very destructive practices. So actually, if we just put a little bit more of the world off limits to very destructive forms of economic exploitation, and I should say in this that, in the discussions around 30 by 30, which is a global UN commitment, actually many of the places around the world that are doing best for managing biodiversity are those areas which are protected for indigenous peoples, places like the Amazon, where there are indigenous areas which are managed meant to be protected for them. Of course, they are also being infiltrated by mining companies and so on as well. But in the UK, when we talk about 30 by 30, what we come up against is, of course, the kind of vested interests of landowners and agribusinesses who try and resist some of those protections. Wouldn't it be nice if our national parks in this country were actually owned by the nation? Because they're not. About 10% of them belong to the public sector and belong to you and me. The rest of them are owned by some very, very large private landowners. Dartmoor, near where I live, half of it is owned by just 15 landowners. And we wonder why nature is in decline in our national parks, our supposedly protected areas.
But Socrates, we've been pretty negative about capitalism and what it's done to the planet. But on the other hand, there is a kind of productive energy about capitalism, which in theory we ought to be able to harness. I mean, thinking of, the creation of renewables, what's happened to renewables in the last 15 years has been pretty remarkable. Yeah. I mean, how do we get that balance right? If we say that capitalism is incompatible with environmental protection and climate action, aren't we? There's a baby in a bathwater problem there, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Let's remind ourselves. Tesla is a product of capitalism, right? Disruptor brought all good things for profit. Vestas, another big example of capitalism, right? I used to work for the regulator of energy in the UK back in the late 2000s when we were trying to map scenarios around how does the UK decarbonize its energy sector. And we're trying to take decisions as regulators. Is it wind energy? Is it solar? Is it offshore, onshore, and so on and so forth? There is a very fundamental question. Are we the right people to take those decisions as regulators, right? And as you said, there is a balance. But going back to the example you brought about Norway. So Norway has a very interesting rule about whether it drills into Arctic. It actually says that it doesn't drill up to the point where there is snow and ice, which has been going up.
Problem with that.
Right?
Yeah.
Which has been going up. And they have a very intense internal dialogue. Do they drill? Do they not drill? And when they say we don't drill, they go and look at their pensions and we're like, maybe we drill a little bit. And that's, I think, always the balance. I think it's a trade-off. And that trade-off needs to be set by the government, clearly.
Well, Norway is also just starting to try and do seabed mining as well.
Exactly. So it is a decision that needs to be taken by the government, trying to represent what the future generations will gain versus what will happen today, right?
Okay, but we do have to live with our mixed economy. We live with capitalism. Given that admission of 68% of US executives admitting that companies are guilty of greenwashing, what do we do about that?
To continue watching this video, click the link in the top left or in the description below. Or visit iai.tv for more debates and talks from the world's leading thinkers on today's biggest ideas.